Welcome to Federal Insights Identity Access Management Month, sponsored by SailPoint. Now here's your host, Tom Timmon.
Some 85% of all federal employees use their smart identity cards to log on to networks. Now agencies are ready for the next phase of identity management. To really secure networks and data, they need to manage who gains access to the information and when. Shmendra Paul is Program Manager of the Information Sharing Environment in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. He tells Executive Editor Jason Miller about progress with implementing a back-end attribute exchange as part of that next phase of identity management.
As we look further into the cybersecurity discussions, as agencies mature around cybersecurity, it seems to be this idea of roles and responsibilities, understanding what data you're allowed to see, what data you're allowed to read from, write from, share with. All those things seem to be getting more important. Agencies are really focusing on it. The information sharing environment that you run has been really on the front end of that discussion for years. Remember, we did a story probably 2011, 2012 of a pilot the ISE did with the General Services Administration. And then I think we talked about it again probably in 2015. What's the latest with this idea of the backend attribute exchange? And maybe just a little bit of intro, what is the backend attribute exchange?
The backend attribute exchange is a secure way for different agencies, federal agencies, state, local, tribal agencies, to securely register and share attributes about data and about people to help calibrate policy around privacy, around security, around information sharing, right? And to scale that and automate that. You're right. We've deployed the pilot. It's in production. It's proven successful. It's in use today, hosted by the GSA. Other agencies have partnered with us using the same technology. A great example is DHS with the HISN, Homeland Security Information Network, and others. So it's widely used. What's interesting, though, is that over the last couple of years, we've seen more and more use of standards and direct connects using those standards, SAML assertions, if you like, right, to be able to implement that functionality in software and do that directly. And because it's standards-based, you know, the cost of those point-to-point connections is less, right? So both options are out there. Both are being used at scale. A great example of how this is being used is with our Sensitive but Unclassified Network Federation, where we've successfully supported our partners at DHS with HISN, FBI with their LEAP, LEO application, RISNET, which is grant-funded but owned by the state and locals, and IntelLink from the intelligence community. Taken together, it's about 500,000 registered users, active users, federal, state, local, and private sector. And we've been able to support our partners to implement simplified and, in many cases, single sign-on across those networks, solving a critical problem going back to 9/11. And increasingly, our partners are moving towards using attributes to do security-trimmed, privacy-trimmed federated queries, federated search.
In fact, it's being used so widespread. The acceptance level is high. I know we've written about the HISN network over the years in terms of how they're bringing in this idea of roles and responsibilities, back-end attribute exchange. For them to use it, what the benefits are simple, but go through them. You mentioned single sign-on as one, but it's also understanding from a software level, if you will, who can have access and when and how they use it. Talk a little bit about that.
What we're finding here is mission shared services. So it turns out HISN uses RIS for identity proofing of state and local law enforcement in particular, right, to be able to issue credentials and assign attributes. That only works if you've got a common understanding of what those attributes are, right, and how you attribute those attributes to people. So having those standards in place, defining the attributes, the software that supports that business process, right, we've done that at a larger scale than that specific example I've given you. But it's really interesting when you think about it. Shared services is a key idea, but all the action on shared services is on the back office side. How do you do shared services on the mission side? It's through interoperability, right, and then following end-user demand, almost like a market-based approach, right? In this case, state and locals were much more comfortable with RIS not doing identity proofing than a federal agency because RIS is owned by the state and locals themselves.
How does the identity proofing work? If I'm somebody coming from a state and local law enforcement agency or even a DHS, a person who's using HISN, I submit my what, and then it gets checked, and then it comes back to me and says, here's what you have access to. Walk me through it a little bit.
You have to establish that you work for a law enforcement agency, right? If you're a police officer, you're sworn law enforcement. That exists in the context of an agency, right? Agencies have different policies for onboarding folks, right, for establishing them as sworn law enforcement versus civilian employees as a way to differentiate. And what are their policies around maintaining currency of those credentials when somebody leaves, right? Do they have the business process around taking that credential away within 30 days or some amount of time? Establishing those controls, right, is key in, you know, harmonizing the specific aspects of those controls across levels of government, across domains of activity. So that's the kind of thing, right? And so there's a process here. It's a business process, but it gets reflected eventually in an attribute that's trusted across, really at arm's length, right, across agencies where there's no direct person-to-person relationship. Why? Because the infrastructure is there to assure that those controls are implemented, managed, audited, and all the rest.
And a lot of that is done automatically through software. I mean, that's the key to this. If you had to look me up every time I wanted to go look at this database, you'd never get anything done.
Yeah.
I'd never get access to the databases. So a lot of this is automated. Is that
correct? It's automated, and it's based on standards first, and the standards implemented in software. Those standards exist at the business process level, at the technical level, at the data element level. And, you know, that's really our contribution at ISC is our focus on standards-based interoperability, and not just technical standards, but business process policy standards.
Shmender Paul is the program manager of the Information Sharing Environment in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. I'm Tom Temin.
Go beyond the PIV card and secure your agency with identity governance. Security doesn't stop at the front door. You need better visibility and governance over who has access to what systems and data in your agency. SailPoint, the leader in identity governance, helps your agency better mitigate risk and move it forward securely and confidently. Visit them at SailPoint.com to learn more. That's SailPoint.com. SailPoint, the power of identity.
You're listening to Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller's interview with Shmender Paul, Program Manager of the Information Sharing Environment in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence.
Let's step back just from the back-end attribute exchange, which is a fascinating project, and maybe look more broadly at how the ISC has promoted this idea of identity management through the authoritative attributes over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
Yes, that's right. I mentioned earlier the Sensitive and Unclassified Network Federation, the Big Four, as we call them. DHS HISN, FBI Leo Leap, IntelLink RISNET. Each of those in turn has got other networks associated with them. You know, so there's several dozen of these networks that are involved. And across those networks, we've defined 8 mandatory authoritative attributes and close to 100 optional attributes. Going through the governance process of gaining agreement in detail, right, where you establish the definitions, understand how they're used, the use cases, you test it out, you iterate, and all that is been a key success of the office. And again, our model is a network leadership model. So the heavy lift is being done by our partners. We provide that center of mass, though, that central place to convene partners that's neutral, trusted, authoritative to, you know, support that work going forward. And then, of course, we provide subject matter expertise, staff support, and piloting kind of support, things like that.
And when you talk about this idea of piloting and this SBU Federation, the identity management piece is probably one of those areas that is so important, because if you don't know who, then the what doesn't really matter. I mean, yeah. If anyone has access to the what, then you've kind of lost the battle.
It's right. And, you know, as you mentioned, we partnered with GSA. We made that decision early on. You know, my domain is terrorism-related information sharing, which is pretty broad, but it's still a subset of, you know, the target audience here. The logic was pretty compelling to me early on to go to GSA, right, as a place where you work government-wide shared services, where you've got the Federal CIO Council anchored, you've got their, you know, the work on identity and access management. So we partnered with them. So it could be a horizontal crosscut, because identity and access management is a horizontal crosscut. It's not, we want to use it for terrorism, but, you know, use it for law enforcement, use it for health and human services, use it for just general good government.
And I think that's one of the things the standards brings you, that, and we've seen this with other things. I think you mentioned to me, and this is a little bit off topic, but I think we can bring it full circle, the suspicious activity reporting and NEAM as an example. All of a sudden, NEAM gets brought in to use not just for law enforcement, but all of a sudden, I think it's being used in other areas too. And the same things can be done, as you said here, with the ID management.
The most interesting and exciting work in NEAM today is going on with the Administration for Children and Family over at HHS, where HHS, whether it's ACF, Administration for Children and Families, CMS, some of the other human services and related programs are looking at information interoperability and are modeling a lot of what's happened in the public safety, national security space, and leveraging best practices, and in some cases, reusing them like NEAM. So that's an exciting development.
And I guess the same thing can happen with identity management. If we have the standards that are being used, obviously, in the law enforcement area, but if, let's just pick on health IT as an example, it may already be happening, they can then, okay, is this doctor the right doctor? And can this doctor see this patient's medical records? And can this doctor share those records, or can they only see it? I think there's so many pieces and parts that identity management can play a role in things outside of law enforcement. Is that starting to happen at least a little bit?
Yeah. It is. It's happening a lot. I can share with you one project that we supported with our partners at DOJ a couple years back that, and I'll make the connection to current events in a minute. That project was around reentry of prisoners into communities, right, where there was potential for mental health issues, and you wanted to make sure those folks, when they got to the community, were able to get appropriate services that they were entitled to. So we had to bridge to share that information between a law enforcement corrections kind of setting into a health and human services setting. The policy frameworks are very distinct in both areas, but they overlap. You've got the FBI's CJIS, Criminal Justice Information System Security Policy, the gold standard for law enforcement information sharing. And then in the human services area, you got HIPAA, right? Everybody knows that. So if you try to bridge those two frameworks, it's very hard. Well, we helped folks break it down into the atomic controls, because they both are based on the NIST 853 series of controls, security and privacy. So doing that modeling then allowed for like-to-like comparisons, and then making risk-adjusted decisions about sharing, identifying compensating controls, and that project was very successful. Tying it to current events, that was one of several drivers for our flagship on the standards and technology area, Project Interoperability, and an update to the core interoperability framework, where we're looking to integrate and support greater degrees of policy harmonization, standardization, and eventually automation across domains of activity, across agencies, across levels of government.
Another big project, I guess, related to, I think, all of this is this idea of that attribute registry service. This was an effort that I think has been mentioned in your annual report to Congress several times. What's the latest with that effort? And talk a little bit about the impact.
The attribute registry service is in place today. It's being used by a couple of different initiatives. One I'd highlight is an effort by GSA, OPM, and the DOD to share attributes to support better use of the CAC cards, right? The HSPD-12 cards and the like, those PIVI cards, ensure proper credentialing when you access a facility.
This is physical access security?
Physical access.
But it's happening on the back end at the software level in many ways, too. It's not just, hey, I'm showing my card, and yeah, Shmendra Paul.
No, you're able to use the card, and the card ties to you, but then there's software on the back end. There's exchange of the attributes and all that, and the attribute registry service gives you the definition of what are the authoritative attributes that are managed and shared by different participants in a federation. But, going a step further, we've at ISC had this unique opportunity privilege to be able to tie into several of the different governance structures around attribute management, attribute-based access control, identity credential, and access management. So, of course, there's the ISIMC, Identity Security Access Management Committee, under the Federal CIO Council. There's also CNSS, Committee on National Security Standards. And then we plug into several of the intelligence community CIO working groups. And then there's a fourth group. We've been working with DHS, Science and Technology, and NPPD, with the Federal Communications Commission, other stakeholders in the federal government, and our state and local partners around public safety, identity credential, and access management. Think FirstNet, right? Great example here is FirstNet rolls out. My office and FirstNet share that we both were follow-up to recommendations of the 9/11 Commission report. Well, as FirstNet gets deployed broadly, we want to make sure that whether you're in a legacy application like Leo or RIS or HISN, or you're using FirstNet directly, your credentials work, that the approach to information interoperability in the presence of security and privacy constraints is the same. So, FirstNet's been a part of this process too. So across all those different forums, my engineers have been working to support under those governance structures to ensure that there's a degree of alignment and activity where appropriate. So that includes, the managed attribute kind of thing.
And going back to the managed attribute thing, having a service that can look at the attributes, are you registered, are you not? As your example of OPM, GSA, and DoD shows, are you allowed into the building? Do you need an escort or you don't need an escort? All those attributes are important in terms of the reciprocity piece, which we know is still a challenge with the HSPD 12, CAC, the smart identity cards. But that could help move
towards
you.
It can help. And there's, you know, there's a, I don't want to paint too rosy a picture, right? There's a, still a lot of work to do, as you know, and your listeners know, but showing the way, right? Piloting approaches that go across communities, that's sort of our role, right? And then continuing to champion these cross-cutting, cross-domain, cross-agency approaches.
Shmender Paul is the program manager of the Information Sharing Environment in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. I'm Tom Temin.
Go beyond the PIV card and secure your agency with identity governance. Security doesn't stop at the front door. You need better visibility and governance over who has access to what systems and data in your agency. SailPoint, the leader in identity governance, helps your agency better mitigate risk and move it forward securely and confidently. Visit them at SailPoint.com to learn more. That's SailPoint.com. SailPoint, the power of identity.
An important project of the information sharing environment is helping make sure state and local governments and federal agencies are together when it comes to sharing information. For a progress report, Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller, spoke with Shmendra Paul, program manager of the information sharing environment in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence.
Now, Shmendra, the other thing I want to jump over to is this idea of FICAM. We've talked about the Federal Identity Credential Access Management, the roadmap that's come out several times. You guys are playing a pretty big role in this education of what FICAM is, how it works, and obviously the encouragement of it to be baked into the standards, to be part of the broader discussion. What's the latest with FICAM? How is it getting pushed down, if you will, or shared or encouraged with the state and local community, especially around the importance of easing information sharing?
Yes, that's right. A key objective of ours that we've supported our interagency partners over the last number of years has been to drive greater degrees of consistency on the the strategy enterprise architecture level, which is what the Federal Identity Credential and Access Management Roadmap is, and then driving that down into implementation guidance with common standards, right, that then can link to software products and solutions, right, to ensure greater degrees of interoperability around identity and access management, physical and logical. So a couple of successes that, you know, here towards the end of the administration I'd like to highlight. One is, we've sponsored an effort with CNSS, Committee of National Security Systems, for them to analyze the FICAM roadmap, figure out how to do an analog on the secret for national security systems, secret fabric, and issue guidance. And so that was successful. They issued guidance that is essentially the FICAM roadmap. We've, as I mentioned, working with ICCIO and state and local partners on the state and local side. NASIO, National Association of State CIOs, has issued the SICAM roadmap, the state ICAM roadmap, which is modeled on the federal ICAM roadmap. The key here, though, you know, these are higher level documents, right? So at the end of the day, people got to write code, they got to buy products, they got to implement. So it's the implementation guidance that really drives the interoperability. And there, you know, I feel really that we've done a lot of good work around consistent SAML assertions, security access markup language, right, to be able to implement this, tying that to the NIST 800 framework, clearly providing guidance and frameworks for doing audit, so you can look at standards-based acquisition and things like that. As a matter of fact, that's at the heart of our work to scale up policy automation, you know, similar to what the community I'm involved with has done with NEEM and that I've had a hand in over the years, where you look at data standards and lexicons across different communities and figure out how to federate those. We're doing that now at the policy level. That's a big idea, but we've been having some success with it. And it kind of builds from these various threads, whether it's the backend attribute exchange, attribute registry service, and the FICAM roadmap, whether it's piloting we've done with state and local partners. As a matter of fact, the DHS and their data framework is probably the leading instantiation of these ideas, the work that Donna Roy and others have done over at DHS.
One of the things you mentioned I just want to come back on is, it's one thing to put out these high-level roadmaps. It's wonderful that, you know, people are looking at them. But are they being implemented? And you brought up the fact that that's really the important piece here. Are they writing code? Are they implementing it in their solutions and software? Are you seeing that happening? Do you have, obviously vendors play a role. They have a big input, but they're part of the discussions, I imagine. But are they coming back to you saying, hey, we've taken that and we've put that in all our products? Or, hey, this is so great. The interoperability piece is so important to us that we understand where you're coming from. We've made that, you know, part of our product development effort. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's the heart of the work we're doing with the Standards Coordinating Council. So we stood up the Standards Coordinating Council with our consultation with our federal partners. That's a unique public-private partnership. Three international standards organizations, the OASIS, Object Management Group, and the Open Geospatial Consortium. Several industry associations, including the IGES Institute, ACT-IAC, and others. Federal participation, state and local participation via the national practice associations that are focused in this area. So the flagship within the SCC is the governance is project interoperability. And within that, the information sharing and safeguarding core interoperability framework. So what we're trying to do is to go from those higher level enterprise architecture documents, which are important to drive alignment, strategy around technology, and set the framework, but then you're drilling that down into a much more constrained set of standards that are implemented in software, products, or custom-developed software, or open-source software. And then, you know, you doing that through a set of assertions that are testable, right? And those assertions are around bundles of controls, security and privacy controls, that are, again, modeled on the NIST 853 series, the work that Ron Ross and company have done, that are established really as the gold standard. Thousands of controls. Everybody uses them, right? But they implement them in slightly distinct ways using language that's specific to their community. And, you know, at the end of the day, those variations, they pile up and become what I think of as gratuitous variations because they don't add value to the mission. They don't add value in terms of security and privacy, but they are barriers to information interoperability.
You mentioned the SAML assertion several times. You mentioned, you know, you do this through a set of assertions. Just back up for a sec for me and define as best as you can in layman's terms this idea of what an assertion is, a SAML assertion. Start there.
Yeah, so SAML is a standards framework for describing security assertions, right? So think about it as XML for security. It's widely used in the identity and access management space. And what we do is with the interoperability framework I mentioned, the information sharing, safeguarding, core interoperability framework, is to, one, publish engineered bundles of security and privacy controls, right, that in turn can go down to specific assertions, XML statements. And those controls are around business processes like, as I mentioned earlier, how do you onboard somebody and issue a credential? How do you train somebody, for example, so that they can handle criminal intelligence? How do you maintain currency in that training? What's your policy around updating patches and how do you assure that policy is implemented? What's your password policy? All of those kinds of things that in turn add up to security and privacy policy, right? We make assertions around those. Those assertions are, you know, reflected in these XML statements that are testable. And they're testable in terms of self-assertion testing. They can also be audited externally, but you have then guidelines for doing that in a consistent standardized process that can then reduce the cost of audit and allow for greater reuse of audit. It's a FedRAMP-like idea, but the next generation.
Shmender Paul is the program manager of the Information Sharing Environment in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights Identity Access Management Month, sponsored by SailPoint on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Identity Management.